winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. With less than a month left in the legislative session, Albany's power players are rearranging the pieces on the chessboard. Our Matt Ryan has a look at the week's headlines.
The Senate and Assembly, led by Health Chairs Gustavo Rivera and Dick Gottfried, held a hearing on the New York Health Act Tuesday in Albany. It would establish a system of single-payer health care in the states. The hearing went on for almost 13 hours and included testimony from those on both sides of the issue. In these two clips, we'll hear from Dr. Mitch Katz, the president and CEO of New York City Health and Hospitals, and Bill Hammond of the Empire Center.
We support the New York Health Act because we believe that health care is a right and that people should have insurance coverage so that they can stay healthy and to treat illness before it requires emergency room or hospital admission. We support the New York Health Act because the current health insurance system eats up about 20% or more of our health care dollars on needless administration and bureaucracy. That money really should go to the care of patients. In the case of health and hospitals, we have to negotiate separately with each insurance company, arrange to follow their rules on prior authorization, send in information on their forms, and even when we do everything right, they sometimes refuse to pay. We're currently in mediation with a for-profit insurance company that says that a three-year-old boy brought to one of our emergency rooms with a fever of 103 and unresponsive should have been treated as an outpatient. No responsible doctor would have sent that child home.
Your premise is that you can, if the state takes over healthcare financing, you're going to deliver top-notch service at lower cost. You're going to save billions of dollars. But the experience in New York State with government programs in general is just the opposite. It's not great service. Sometimes it's awful service at very high cost. And I think if I just bring up a few examples, the MTA, we're hearing an awful lot about crowded late trains. The elevators and the escalators don't work consistently. Most of the stations aren't accessible to the handicapped. This is a program that the state's been running for generations now. Another example would be the New York City Public Housing Authority. Lots of problems with mold and lead and leaking roofs. A third example would be the public schools. Some of them are quite good. My own kids went to public school. I went to public school. I feel like I got a good education. But not all of the schools are great. There's quite a lot of variation in the quality. And we're spending more than any other state on average. And that probably means we're spending more than any other country on average. In the healthcare area in particular, our per capita spending on Medicaid is the highest in the country. So we're not, the expectation, the promise that the state is going to take over healthcare and do a great job at a low cost, I think you can understand some of the skepticism that you're hearing.
The legislature is not expected to vote on this bill in 2019, but will be holding more hearings across the state in the next month. In other news, the push to allow undocumented immigrants the right to obtain a standard driver's license got a boost this week when the Business Council came out in support of the legislation.
Our immigration system is broken. This does not fix it, but what it does is it gives undocumented immigrants the opportunity to sit for a test, to get licensed, to get on the road, and to have insurance so that when they're driving in New York, they will be covered. And this is a really important element of safety in New York, but also we're also here to say that we want this to be a message to the federal government that our immigration laws need to be fixed. My employers, my members, I hear from every day. There's workforce shortages across the state in every industry, not just agriculture. And one component of that problem is very, very clunky and unworkable immigration laws at the federal level. So we believe that this will hopefully send a message and at the same time ensure that our roadways are safer as a result.
Lawmakers continued to make their case at the press conference.
It's been a long, hard, drawn-out fight. A lot of work from advocates, a lot of work with my co-sponsor, Assemblyman Marcos Crespo. We've traversed the state. We have spoken with any possible organization, be it law enforcement, be it immigration, be it health, I mean, you name it, automobile industry, insurance industry. We reach out to everyone and met with everyone to get their input into the final product so that people can feel better about the green light bill. We made a concerted effort to go to those regions where support for the bill did not exist to alleviate some of the fear that people have. We left no stone unturned. We worked overtime, triple overtime, quadruple overtime with my colleagues in government here. Assemblywoman Cruz has done a fantastic job. There is no more that we can do. We've done everything possible. We've taught people about the economic benefits of the state when you were facing a budget deficit next year. We're talking about $26 million the first year, $55 million every year after. When you talk about safety, certainly all the data has indicated that it make us safer. When you talk about the economics of the bill, everywhere that you have it, you see the economy spurn. People can go into integrate themselves more into local economies, and we have a cost savings. That's why we have approval, support from the automobile industry, from the insurance industry, from the financial services industry, from many leaders.
When I hear the reasons why this makes sense, I hear the numbers, I hear the economics of it, I hear the humanity of it, and I still turn around and put it all out there and get death threats, and I'm told, go back to your country. I am understanding that the argument here isn't so much about what makes sense. The argument here is an anti-immigrant sentiment because people want to punish undocumented immigrants for looking for a better life. People want to make sure that we don't have a shot at actually working, at contributing to our community, and that needs to stop. The reality is we're going to stay here. They're going to continue to drive. They're going to continue to work. But why can't we do it in a way that's safe for our community? What kind of New York do we want our children to see 20 years from now? We have children here visiting the legislature. What do we want them to say 20 years from now? That we were the kind of New York that punishes people for looking for a better life, or that we're the kind of New York that truly welcomes immigrants and makes sure that they are protected, that they're contributing to the economy, and that are truly a part of the society we claim to love, an immigrant society. Yet when it comes time to pay our taxes, when it comes time to make sure that we are doing right by our state, no questions are asked. Well, it's time that the state does right by our immigrant communities.
When Siena College polled on this issue in the spring, 61% said they were against the proposal. It's unclear right now if there are enough votes in the democratically controlled Senate to pass the bill. And finally, congressional members were back home this week, including upstate Democrat Anthony Brindisi. The 22nd district has normally been a safe Republican seat. President Trump won by 15 points in 2016. But the Utica area native beat conservative Claudia Tenney by just under 2 percentage points last fall. He held a town hall meeting Thursday at Herkimer County Community College. Previously, a no vote on impeachment proceedings for President Donald Trump, a constituent asked him if his mind had changed after special counsel Robert Mueller's press conference this week.
As a constituent of yours and knowing that you've taken an oath to protect the Constitution, I have to bring up the elephant in the room. Okay. And that is, yesterday Robert Mueller made it clear that the president has not been exonerated from possible criminal charges and that it was not his job to make those criminal charges due to the Department of Justice policy. He basically laid it at Congress's feet to take care of that. And I know your position that you had stated prior to this. In reading the Mueller report, I see numerous possible charges in the second chapter of obstruction of justice, which is, would be a felony offense. And I'm wondering if you and or the House has, where they're at with a decision about how this is going to be handled, that we have a commander-in-chief who has committed possibly 8 felony offenses.
So I will say that, so I don't sit on any of the committees of jurisdiction. I'm not on oversight or judiciary, any of those committees. Judiciary is the committee ultimately that's going to make that decision on impeachment proceedings. I've said I'm not supportive of impeachment proceedings because I want to see how we can get some things done over this next year and a half. The Speaker has said that she is not in favor of impeachment. She wants to allow the underlying committees to do their work. They are doing their work. They're subpoenaing documents from the administration. The administration has not responded to some of those. There have been court challenges that the administration has lost, and we'll see where that goes. My concern is, as I talk to folks in the community, I want to see, and what I'm hearing from people is, we just want you guys working together, we want you getting things done, and my worry is that over the next year, as proceedings do or do not move forward, it's going to sidetrack everything and not allow us to focus on drug prices, infrastructure, healthcare, working on the veterans issues, working on agricultural issues. So while I think the administration made some very bad decisions, and I think the moral of the story is when Russia calls you and says we want to help, you hang up the phone.
All right, and now for analysis of the week's news. I am happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Joe Spector, Capitol Bureau Chief of the USA Today Network, and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Thanks very much for coming in.
Sure thing.
Thank you.
So, unfortunately, we need to start with conflict, which is...
Always conflict in all the
oh, that's true. That's a good point. That's every week. But as the session ticks down now, we're down to, I guess, about 3 weeks, the governor, it seems, has gone a little bit on the offensive, appearing in multiple radio interviews, including, I guess, 2 with Alan Chartok of WAMC, the public broadcaster here in the Capital Region.
Right. Lengthy interviews, we should say.
Lengthy, yeah, back-to-back almost interviews. He said that the Democrats, specifically the state Senate, are experiencing, growing pains, that that they have perhaps an appetite that is bigger than their stomach, failure to execute, just basically things that seem to be putting them down, especially on issues like the legalization of adult use recreational marijuana.
It seems like the governor doesn't function well unless he has some kind of adversary. Remember probably around this time last year, we were talking about his fighting with New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and his feuding with him, and Bill de Blasio couldn't do anything right and he was always putting him down. Well, now he's friendlier with Bill de Blasio, at least he doesn't insult him in public, but it's the Senate Democrats who are kind of the source of his ire, and now they can't do anything right. And he's been saying, despite the fact that they did a whole bunch of issues earlier in the session, what counts is now, and they're not doing anything on these issues. But at the same time, he's like not really lifting a finger to help them. And they've even asked for help, the Senate Democrats, on what you mentioned, legalizing marijuana, saying, Governor, can you help us get the votes? And he's kind of like, well, no, you do it yourselves, and we'll see how you do. So it seems like it's a stalemate right now. I have a feeling when it gets closer to the deadline of the end of session, he may lend a hand. But right now, he's kind of enjoying just, you know, letting them twist in the wind a little bit.
Yeah, and this is jockeying time. You know, they're trying to stake out their positions. And this is Cuomo's, this is what he's good at, you know. He is good at trying to push the legislature to do what he wants. And some of the things he couldn't get in the budget, where he has the most leverage, now he's pushing them to get them to do that. We'll talk a little more about what those specifics are. But remember, you know, this idea that, Democrats are going to be in charge of state legislature, it's going to be all harmony and everybody's going to be on the same page. Mm. It's not that simple. You know, the governor has his agenda, the legislature has their agenda, and within the Senate and Assembly, there are regional differences. You know, we're going to talk about legalizing marijuana, right? New York City lawmakers, by and large, support that. But you get into the suburbs, Long Island, Hudson Valley, and upstate, and it's not so clear-cut.
Joe, you did a survey recently of all 62 counties and found that roughly two-thirds of them are undecided as to whether or not they would opt out of legalizing adult use recreational marijuana, but there are some significant and very populous areas of the state where the counties, it appears, have already determined no way.
And that's right, and that's going to influence how lawmakers here in Albany vote, if they have a vote, right? If Long Island, Suffolk and Nassau County leaders are saying, we don't want sales of marijuana here, well, that's going to signal to that Long Island 9 senators that, well, maybe we shouldn't be voting for this if we're going to go home and we're going to get beat up about it.
Yeah, the Senate has a real dilemma here because these are their so-called marginal members. They're new Democrats in districts that still have a lot of Republicans, and they don't want to give the Republicans issues to, you know, run against them in 2 years. And one of them would be legalizing marijuana, giving driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants, to some conservative people. That sounds like, you know, a really radical agenda, and they don't want to give them fodder. At the same time, they're getting a lot of pressure from the rest of the Democrats, a lot of them from New York City, saying, hey, you know, let's do this. The neighboring states like Massachusetts have it. You know, let's legalize marijuana. Other states allow undocumented immigrants to drive. So, yeah, so what? This is where they have to decide. Do they protect the marginals? Is it better to do these things in 2019 because elections aren't for a year and a half and maybe the voters will forget about it? So it seems like they really are having a hard time deciding.
With 39 votes, they have a little bit more margin for their marginals. But
not quite enough. Not for all... It's true, but not for like all six of the Long Island Democrats, for instance,
absolutely.
Right? You know.
So we've already mentioned a couple of the things that are on what the governor issued in another one of those long conversations with Alan Chartok, and that's his 10-point list of things that he wants to get done. Don't worry, we're not going to mention them all.
Can I name them
no,
all? No,
we need a good graphic.
I know.
We need to scroll it through.
We already mentioned. Driver's licenses and of course recreational pot. Driver's licenses got a something of a boost this week when the State Business Council came out in support of it. That is not an organization that one usually associates with marijuana.
That's right. That's right. And
the
driver's license. We're talking about they're still not advocating
we have
for
10
marijuana.
Issues.
Marijuana, okay. I mean, you know, that's a business issue too.
Well,
so
that's,
who knows, you know?
More business there.
Yeah, that's true. But it could give cover to some of the senators on the fence saying, well, the business council thinks it's okay for these undocumented immigrants to drive. So, you know, it's okay if we vote for it because there are people in the business community who want it. And mostly, Heather Bruschetti, the head of the business council, said mostly they just want immigration fixed on the federal level because it's really a nuisance in so many ways to so many businesses that it's so unsettled. So she said it's part of sending a message that we want this fixed, but it could help a couple of senators anyways vote for it. Say, well, look, the business community wants this, so, you know, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, for Cuomo, you know, he could say, he did this with the Senate Republicans, right? For all these years, he said, hey, what can I do? You know, it's Senate Republicans. I can't tell you. What am I going to do?
He misses those days.
Yeah, but he's setting it up this way again, right? He's pushing Senate Democrats and saying, I don't know if they can't pass marijuana. You know, what do you want from me? You know,
he did this again in one of the interviews where he was asked, well, what about are you putting ethics reform on your list of 10 things? And he said, I think they've done all the ethics reform that they are going to do, as if it's not my look at it. I really have nothing to do with this.
Well, so, but the thing is, you know, nobody knows the individual lawmakers, but they know who the governor is in New York State. Ultimately, the governor gets blame when things go bad and gets credit when things go well.
Other things on the governor's list, reforming surrogacy laws that would allow people to set up financial arrangements for surrogacy arrangements for to have somebody else have a child.
That's right.
It's weird. New York is one of only three states that doesn't have that law on the books. It seems like something that there's general agreement on.
In the modern world.
I know. When you go through some of these lists, it's like New York is supposed to be the most progressive state. Well, and like so many things, we're just really, you know, behind other states.
Cuomo's picking up some things that I think he thinks that'll probably pass. And then there's, you know, it's a sort of like a range, right? Some of that stuff will probably pass. And then you start getting into, as Karen mentioned, driver's licenses, marijuana, then you start getting into things that might be a little more thorny.
The end of the so-called gay panic defense, whereby someone who commits an assault or even a murder can say, oh, I had an overwhelming emotional reaction when, for example, I was the target of a perceived come-on from someone of the same sex. That's another thing, like surrogacy, that's amazing to think that that is still
on the books. That one just seems like such a no-brainer and really surprising that that is still on the books. in New York State.
8 years into Andrew Cuomo's governorship, which is something you saw a tweet from Melissa DeRosa, his secretary, saying it's unbelievable this is still a thing, which of course prompts the response, which I of course said on Twitter. Haven't you been in office for eight years?
They've been here since 2011, so you can't blame everything on the new Senate Democrats because Cuomo's been here for many years too. But that one does seem like, you know, that definitely should be off the books. I can't imagine people disagreeing with that.
Yeah, it's probably one they'll do. There's no question.
Yeah.
Prevailing wage and a couple of others. It was a fairly ambitious list with some very low hanging fruit. Is it likely that all of those things are going to end up getting done?
Well, I think, did we mention the rent regulations?
Well, that's the big one.
You know,
I think we left that out, and that is actually...
It is an upstate show.
Yes,
so,
but that is the key to everything.
But it might be upstate, too. They might extend it to upstate. There's talk about extending these rent regulations to upstate cities in particular.
But that's getting pushed back from a lot of upstate lawmakers.
Yeah. They run out June 15th.
Yeah, that's you probably might want to put that like number one, probably.
So what I'm saying
is,
that could be the key to getting agreements on all of these other issues because they have a definite deadline, June 15th. They have to renew the rent laws in some form. They're probably going to strengthen them. And perhaps these other issues could get all rolled into the so-called big ugly or big ball of wax. So that's like a way that they could get agreements on some of these issues.
Well, that's it. You know, we talk about 10 items, right? There's probably 15 if you added questions about vaccines.
Oh, yes.
Right? Whether that's they're going to end the religious exemptions for vaccines in New York as measles has spread throughout parts of New York and now in parts of the country even. So, I mean, that's one they're looking at. I mean, sports betting.
That's right,
expanding.
Mobile sports betting.
You know,
and
that's another one that,
that
Cuomo kind of opened the door a little bit for the other day. So he has his 10 items. You probably could add another, you know, dozen on to that for legislature's priorities. So
I mean, it's possible they got a lot of stuff done in the budget that that got rolled into that. It just depends if the governor wants to work with the Senate Democrats ultimately, or if he wants to have them look bad at the end of the session.
On rent regulation on Thursday, you saw Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie and Senate Democratic Leader Andrew Stewart Cousins put out a joint statement saying we are now ready to move forward with the most aggressive and progressive rent regulation law in the state's history, making no mention of Andrew Cuomo whatsoever.
Well,
is that perhaps a response to the sort of pushback we discussed at the top of this chat?
Well, I know the tenants groups are trying to urge them to work together without the governor because they don't trust the governor and they think he might weaken the laws. So I don't know if that's a bluff or not, or just because, Cuomo was trashing them all week and they want to,
the real estate industry is extraordinarily strong in Albany, and they've been pushed back against the type of tenant protections and extending various rent laws that Democrats have wanted. Now they're in power. Will they be able to get more than they were able to get under Senate Republicans who, by and large, kind of kept basically the same rules on the books each and every time?
And the legislature can certainly pass bills and give it to the governor to sign or veto. In fact, that's kind of how it's supposed to work.
I know.
But in our modern New York State, the governors get very involved in every bit of it. And I think Cuomo at one point threatened that he would veto the rent laws if they didn't include him.
He said that straight up, that if he was left out of negotiations, he said that to Alex Shortalk again, if he's left out of negotiations, he's going to veto it, which seems sort of content, devoid of content.
I don't know. This is all sort of, the gamesmanship leading up to the big June 15th date, I think.
Very quickly, another thing the governor said this week, he is running for a fourth term. You both have 5 seconds to give your reactions. Karen.
I think it's because he was raising all that money, $25,000 plate fundraisers. He was getting a lot of flack for that. He just got reelected, so he had to say, I'm going for a fourth term.
Yes, but there is something to be said for the fact that it appears that that's the direction he's going. He's not running for president, at least by all indications at this point. So what's he going to do? Run for a fourth term, something his father was unable to do?
Yeah, no term limits in New York. All right, thanks very much to Joe Spector of the USA Today Network and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Let's look at this week's poll question. What letter grade would you give the Democratic Senate majority during this legislative session? Governor Cuomo was critical this week. We want to know what you think. Vote at nynow.org. Last week, our question was based on a bill offered up by the Assembly Republicans. Would you like to see an income tax exemption given to volunteer firefighters and EMS providers? Two-thirds said yes. Beverly in Albany said they're deserving of this exemption for the service they give so willingly. Robert on Long Island agrees they fill a vital role in our community and we need more of them. This would be a great recruitment tool to get more volunteers. And finally, Monique in Rochester, watching on WXXI, said she's a nurse, and if they get an exemption, we should too. We want to thank everyone for responding. You can do so this week again at nynow.org. It's where you can find links to us on social media and all of our past programs as well. There's also a link to my paper's outstanding Capital Confidential blog, which is also reachable at timesunion.com. That'll do it for us today. We send you off with video from the Mohawk Valley Village of Herkimer. For Matt Ryan and everybody here at WMHT, I'm Casey Seiler of the Times Union. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week on New York Now.